Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
Doing great, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, a lot of debate over the tush push and whether or not that's going to continue to be allowed in the National Football League. We could see a vote today with the competition committee. So, what's your thought on this and where we could be headed with the tush push?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if it gets to a vote today. It's pretty interesting. You know, I worked on this pretty extensively yesterday and felt like I got a feel for maybe half the league for about 16 teams, and it feels dead to me, honestly. If the comments of head coaches and general managers are accurate, I think right now, not even counting, let's say, like the Arizona Cardinals, who obviously Jonathan Gannon, ex-Philadelphia Eagles coach, not counting the New Orleans Saints, when, you know, you have a head coach there, Philadelphia Eagle coach, and Kellen Moore, I still count 10 teams, not including those two. I still count 10 teams that are leaning away from, voting for a tush push ban. And you only need, 9 total votes, to ban it. And so, you know, just looking, like I said, at 16 teams, I'm already coming up with 10 who, publicly have made comments that they're not for a ban. So I think ultimately what will end up happening, this is just me speculating here, I think the competition committee is getting together right now. I think what will ultimately happen is the Green Bay Packers, who have put the proposal forward to ultimately ban this play, are going to see that this is probably going to go down in flames if it reaches a vote. So it'll either get tabled. And, you know, typically when things get tabled, there's some kind of a trade-off. They'll table it and say, let's look at medical data moving forward. We just need more information on this, so let's extend it out through the 2025 season. And then we'll decide a year from now whether or not it's something we need to revisit. Or the Green Bay Packers will just look at it and go, you know what, let's withdraw the proposal, and then we can rewrite it in a way that some teams – you know, have issues with maybe the language of it, or just try to thread the needle a different way. I would be shocked, honestly, at this stage if it was brought to a vote and ultimately passed. And I spoke directly to somebody with the Eagles yesterday, and I think they're kind of in the same boat. Obviously, it's considered their play. Nick Sirianni is one of the really big historical figures who not only brought this into Philadelphia, but really developed it, and I think the Eagles are sitting there staring at this going, you know, that we don't feel like there's enough of a groundswell since the owners' meetings has started to really do away with it.
What about the the Lions, you know, the division winner thing? I mean, I haven't heard much about that. That's
it's not really happening. I feel like the proposals, like the one that, look, the tush push, honestly, I feel like has kind of dominated everything, you know, since the meetings have started. It's really become that one where it's the lightning rod, and everybody's, you know, really aimed at this, and that's what's kind of everybody's radar has kind of been jammed up with this. But in terms of what I think will pass, I think the dynamic kickoff will become permanent. The touchback, you know, whether it will be moved to the 35 from the 30, we'll see on that. I don't know. You definitely get a sense amongst some different league executives that it feels like maybe moving the touchback to the 35, which basically the rule would be aimed at forcing opposing teams, like put a kick in a play, like force a return rather than just kicking it and you know, taking the touchback. If your opponent is going to be at 35, you're going to be more likely to put the ball in play. I think there's that one's a little dicey in terms of moving it, but I do think the dynamic kickoff becomes more permanent. I think the direct contact between NFL teams and free agents in terms of like teams and the actual players is something that is going to end up passing. All that does is, hey, during the quote unquote tampering period, you can actually have like a Zoom call, one Zoom call or phone call with the actual free agent rather than having to go through the agent during that period. I think that will end up passing. The automatic first down for the legal contest, I think that's dead. I think the seeding, as you said, the Lions, the sort of reseeding to reward best overall record rather than division winner, I don't think that's got enough to pass muster. So that's why I think, you know, really the sensible rules kind of feel like they're going to pass, and it's not a big deal, but the tush push is the one that I think is the broader argument, particularly considering everybody's getting asked about it nonstop.
So, Charles, it sure seems like we're going to see a quarterback battle and a competition between Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones in Indianapolis there. So what's your read on that situation and what this could mean for Anthony Richardson and how he's viewed in that organization?
Yeah, it's look, there's no question that they signed Daniel Jones to come in and push Anthony Richardson. And I'll just tell you, when the signing happened, so many people that I talked to who have been in contact with Daniel Jones, so many people who have really watched Anthony Richardson, what's unfolded in Indianapolis since he came in as a rookie, were kind of, it was like it was just done in their mind. They're like, Daniel Jones is going to take that job. Like, it's, you know, regardless of what you really think about him and how he performed with the New York Giants, I think it's just, there's just such a down feeling on Anthony Richardson after last season. I almost feel like he may have lost that job when he tapped out, when he decided I need to take a break here in the middle of a game. That was sort of when all this confidence was really ultimately lost. And it, particularly Daniel Jones, when you talk about the athletic profile, they're similar. So if they had brought in, let's say a statuesque pocket passer who doesn't have a ton of athletic ability, then maybe you would say, all right, you know, this competition is going to be wonky because you got two guys with really differing skill sets. Daniel Jones doesn't have a differing skill set than Anthony Richardson. They can run the same style of offense. They both are high level athletes. I think, you know, Richardson's a max level athlete, but Daniel Jones is very much an athletic quarterback. So you don't have to change, I think, realistically what you're doing in the meeting room. It's just who can execute the offense. And, you know, Shane Steichen, the head coach, Chris Ballard, the general manager, they've been very clear. Like, look, it's straight up, it's a competition. Like, if Anthony Richardson is going to keep the starting job, he's going to have to win it. He's going to have to fight this guy. And, you know, so we'll see how it unfolds, but I will say that if it's meant to be sort of a kick in the pants with Anthony Richardson, you know, hey, you have to take a huge leap forward with your study habits, with how much you're working, with your physical fitness, with your completion rate, basically everything. I think it's been delivered. Now we'll see ultimately what Anthony Richardson does with that. But I think it's accepted in a lot of corners with people who kind of know that situation there, that Daniel Jones was brought in to likely take that job. And if it doesn't happen, then that's the upside that you have, that Anthony Richardson has turned over a new leaf and come in as a different player than he did, I think, last year.
Okay, Charles, I want you to stay with me now, okay?
Oh, boy. Are we going to talk about gym equipment?
No, but I hope you're a wiper. I certainly hope you're a wiper. I know you've been in the gym hard. Hope you're wiping just as hard as you're lifting, Charles.
Yeah,
let's not make that a drop. Okay, so you're the Tennessee Titans, okay?
Okay.
Yep. You actually love Shedeur Sanders, so you are sending the entire crew down to Cam Ward. You are counting on the Giants to move up to one.
Right.
You are going to send a half contingent to Shedeur this week to kind of throw people off the scent.
Yeah.
You are going to get more draft capital and happily take Shador at three, and you have won the draft. Do you think the scenario sounds plausible in any way?
If it happens, I will tip my cap to the new regime in Tennessee in terms of the front office. I don't think that's what's anticipated.
You don't think that's reality?
I will rest on the evaluations of people across the league. So we're putting together the all-juice team right now. And this is a very heavy, hitting up evaluators, area scouts, over-the-top scouts, general managers, pretty much everybody who lays eyes on prospects. And I would say it's a fairly universal opinion that the difference between Cam Ward and Shador is pretty significant, and that for the Titans to choose Shador over Cam Ward at this stage, they would have to be right in their evaluation in a way that almost seemingly everybody else is wrong. And that's, that can happen. Absolutely. There's no doubt that can definitely happen. I think Bo Nix, again, I keep going back to Bo Nix, because I had people just kill him last year. And ultimately, when I went through, spent time with Sean Payton with the Broncos before the season, he was just like, I don't care. I literally don't care what a single person in the NFL thinks about this guy. It's ultimately what I think about it, how he fits our system, and what I think I can do with him. And he was absolutely right. And, I think by the end of it, the acceptance was he was the right guy for the right team, for the right situation, the right scheme, all these different things. So if that's what the Titans are, if they're looking at Shador and they're saying that's where we're at, and let's play poker here and get the Giants to move up to one, or whoever to move up to one, and they execute it, I would be very, very impressed. I was impressed with what Payton did, honestly, with Nix, because I was like, I felt like it was a gamble, and he showed he knew exactly what he was doing. And I'll say this too about Ward. I told you guys, I think I told you last week, you go back a few weeks. I mean, it's probably about a month now, and his camp seemed to think there was no doubt that the Giants were moving to one to get him. They were just anticipating it. They're waiting for it. Like, when's this ultimately going to happen? But it's number one, I think it'll be super costly. And number two, I think the level of confidence that the Titans would have in drafting Shador you'd be swimming upstream, but that's got to be a great team. You see something that others don't. And there's a reason why, the Broncos were transformed last year in a way that not a lot of people anticipate. I will ask you, Joe, is this something you think you have? Are you reading the situation and you seeing that, hey, this is a Shador situation, or are you saying, hey, could this be something?
This is a theory that has been floated elsewhere at this station. So we have, I just was throwing it out there to see what you thought about it. I mean, I'm with you. Like, if it's actually how they're looking at it and there's actually anything to it, I would tip the cap too, because it's like, wow, you guys have really gone through quite a ruse here to ultimately land at Shador Sanders. I don't think it's real at all. But at this point, we got 3 weeks and this is where we are. We are now digging into just bizarre.
Yeah, theories. And we've been everywhere, right? Haven't we been everywhere here?
Oh, like, yeah, I've pretty much.
Every single week it feels like it's a different, I've gone through iterations myself, and this is not, it wasn't like a creationist effort. It was me talking to people around the league, and I'm telling you, coming out of the combine, people were like, nah, the Titans aren't taking Cam Ward. It's not happening. Like, it's, and these are individuals who were spending time around Titans evaluators, who were, going out at night with Titans evaluators, who were at events after the, following the combine, assessing players. And they definitely felt there was a vibe that the Titans were just not that impressed with Cam Ward, and that they were going to be going somewhere else with the first pick, either dealing out or taking, let's say, Abdul Carter or whoever. I wonder how much the the foot issue with Abdul Carter plays at this stage. Definitely there are some teams that I don't know he's necessarily on their sub board at this point. But, you know, immediately when there's a foot issue with a pass rusher, even an elite level guy, there's certainly a heightened sense of, you know, where is this going forward? How worried should we be? Now we're not going to see him work out. How long are we going to go here? There's going to be a medical recheck. There was a thought process, hey, he's going to take part in the Penn State Pro Day. Not happening, you know. And so you wonder how much that changes the dynamic. But I every passing week, it's kind of felt like I've heard differing opinions or the momentum's changed. And there's a little bit of sort of reading the tea leaves yourself when you see a pro day and you're like, all right, well, let's see who they sent. How much are they driving into, you know, social media wise and the number of executives and coaches and everybody's going to watch him and they're working him out. And what is the private workout like? When do they go to dinner with him? You know, you pour all the resources into it, but I will say, get back to basics. Just look at the evaluation. And overall, for them to pass on Cam Ward for Shadur, I think personally, again, and this is looking broadly across the entire league, they would have to be seeing something that I would say 90 to 95% of the rest of the league is not seeing with the evaluation between those two guys and coming to the conclusion that Shadur is the better player.
Quick clarification on that. Do you think then that the information coming out of Indy is just a case of more information and they change their mind? Like you said, maybe Abdul Carter could be part of that. Or do you actually think that there was active misinformation happening in those conversations?
I don't think it was misinformation. I think it was just the assessments at that stage. You're grasping to try to understand how a team feels about a player. And it's early on. And I mean, it would be individually, you'd have to ask each individual person who is walking away with that feeling, like, why did you feel that way? And it's not going to be a universal, hey, they're telling everybody they don't think he's a great player. You know, no, it's not that kind of a situation where everybody has the same read. It's, you know, hey, we ended up at the same place this night. We're doing drinks and we come across each other and, you know, this individual inside the organization is shrugging, saying, you know, I don't think it's, you know, he's okay. He's not great. You know, I don't think any of the quarterbacks are great. So then they walk out of that situation going, man, they don't really seem to love him. And if you got the first overall pick, you really should love the guy you're selecting. All right, well, it's an assessment. So I think it's different. You know, it was different across the board. I didn't hear any, there wasn't connective tissue between all these different people who were like, hey, it's the GM is just killing this guy. That to me is usually active disinformation when it's like coming from one person high up and you're like, wow, there's some loose lips from this individual and I'm hearing it from half a dozen other people from this individual that he doesn't like him. That to me usually smacks of disinformation. This was more I walked away from it after getting a couple weeks removed from the combine. I walked away from it feeling like, okay, this is just people trying to make their own assessments with their interactions with different individuals in the franchise who have different levels of power, some of which it's like zero. Like if it's an area scout, they don't really have any decision-making power. There's only a few people who have that kind of power. They were walking away underwhelmed with how the Titans felt about Cam Ward. And I think as the process has gone on, I feel like that's changed a little bit, right? Free agency happens. You sign a tackle for the kind of money that the Titans sign the tackle for. And then all of a sudden, you know, you feel these assessments where they're like, yeah, they're not going out and not signing that tackle to, you know, go get a veteran. And then they don't go get a veteran. They're not heavily involved in the veteran market. So they're definitely leaning into the quarterbacks in the draft. And then, like I said, it all comes back to what the assessment is. What's the draft assessment on those quarterbacks? Let that guide you rather than conspiratorial ideas or, you know, just, I don't know. Again, if they go and they draft Shadur, I will tell you it is not something I saw coming. And You know, I've seen wild stuff happen with quarterbacks, but like, let's go back to even Baker Mayfield when he was the first pick in the draft. I exited the Senior Bowl telling people the Browns like Baker Mayfield enough he could be the first pick in the draft. I got murdered for that, but I knew it. I knew it based on people that I talked to directly in the organization. You could feel that there was certainly a consensus inside with some individuals that Baker Mayfield was worthy of that number one overall pick, you know, and people just didn't see it. So I don't know if this is one of those situations where I just don't see Shador and it's there and it'll happen. And in the long run, I'll understand why, but I just, with all the information that's out there and the confusion that gets created in the process, it's that draft evaluation. And I'd have to hear why the draft evaluation for the Titans was dramatically different for Shador than maybe a number of other teams.
So, Charles, it feels like the conversation over the last few years in the NFL at wide receiver has shifted to, you can find a lot of really good wide receivers coming out in the draft that can play for you immediately, right, and can be impactful. I'm looking at this year's draft, and I'm sure there will be some of those guys. The general consensus, though, seems to be that people are down on this year's wide receivers coming out in the draft. So how do you kind of view that and what that can mean for this year's draft at that spot?
Yeah, it's not. I think when you talk to people, there's just not the elite guys at the top. I think that's the one sort of difference is that you've particularly the last couple of years, the classes have been so good. It was not difficult to find some elite level players at the top of the draft from a wideout perspective. This time it's a little bit different because you have one guy, excuse me, in Travis Hunter, who arguably could be wide receiver one, who didn't spend the bulk of his time in college really refining that part of his game. I think, you know, he was more involved with being in the defensive meetings and being a more refined corner. And then yet he went out there as a wide receiver, maybe didn't run the most polished routes, maybe didn't do all these different things perfectly, but put out enough of an athletic profile and then the tape to lead some evaluators to go, if he said today, I'm going to be a wide receiver, he automatically becomes wide receiver one in the class. And we think he'll get a lot better because he hasn't spent the bulk of his time as a football player in those meetings. Now that's where he'll concentrate and he's going to take a huge leap forward, even over what he's done, which has been fairly prolific at the position. So it's weird that maybe your wide receiver one in the draft has to decide whether he's a wide receiver or a corner. And then you get to like Tet McMillan, right, who's the kid out of Arizona, big, big profile. You hear a lot of the Mike Evans comparisons. But, you know, there's mixed reviews because Tet McMillan, you know, from 2023 to 2024, I think there are some people who didn't see the huge leap they really expected between those two seasons. They will tell you that, hey, he presents very, you know, fairly similarly in 2023 and 2024 in terms of what you're looking at on tape. So where's the growth? Where's the, you know, ceiling? He runs a 40. It's, you know, mid, if teams are being generous, it's a 4.5. If teams are not being generous, it's a 4.6. That's the kind of disparity that exists there. So it's like, is he a possession receiver? Does he have explosive playmaking ability? There's a piece of tape, honestly. There's a snippet that emerged really in about the last week of Tet McMillan where it's not really clear where he was or how long. It looks like it was at least a year ago. And there's somebody talking to him on this video, and he's saying he doesn't watch football and, you know, doesn't like watching tape, doesn't like watching game tape. And for some, that's alarming because it's like, does he love football? He's not watching football and he doesn't like to do tape. Is that alarming? And do we think he's just not someone who really loves the game of football? So now we're scared that, is he going to invest the time that's necessary to be a pro when he gets to the NFL? And then there are other people who are like, that's not unusual. Like other people, it's funny. I was talking to a team and one guy said to me, when the snippet had come out, and I said, hey, do you think this is concerning? And he said, when we get our tablets back, he said, do do you know how shockingly low the usage time is for the wide receivers? Like basically just saying like there's a lot of wide receivers who don't watch a ton of film. Like that's just not, and they're really good players, but that's just not what they're devoting their time to is watching film. So not overly concerned about it. So those are the two top guys, right? And then when you get past that, then it's, you got Matthew Golden, the kid who started out here in Houston and then went, you know, to Austin, played for the Longhorns and has a section of games that suddenly created this idea that he could be a top end wide receiver. It's just, there's no superstars at the top. And then you have a second tier group that it's a lot of different individuals, Trey Harris out of Ole Miss. It's just a number of different players that offer something different to different evaluators. If you're looking for a wide receiver, I would say you probably want to be invested in, you know, grabbing a couple of guys beyond the first wave because the first wave's not great. And then hoping that, you know, your scouts really do a great job and your front office does a great job, that's going to separate you.
Well, Charles, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us today, and we will talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good morning.
Yes, sir. You as well. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rexrow. A lot to react to there from Charles. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.